Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
Welcome to the Hollywood Casino Press Box with your host, Frank Cusimano.
Here's the pitch. Right there, that is! Into left field! Hit number 3,000! A run is scored! Musial ran first! On his way to second with a double!
The best interviews and the most informed insight.
McGaffey breaking free, has a seam, and a crease. The kicker can't trip him up. Headed for the end zone. Will it be back-to-back weeks? Yes!
All tied together with the experience of over 20 years of local broadcasting excellence in St. Louis.
Now Stasny gets away from a check to Fabry. Wide open!
Now, here is Frank Cusimano on 590 The Fan and 590thefan.com.
Good morning and welcome. Hollywood Casino Press Box on the all-new 590 The Fan. Boy, it is great coming in here on a Thursday after that Wednesday night. Remember we'd had those Saturdays, Brian, where Mizzou would get beat, Illinois would get beat, the Blues would get beat, you know, because the Blues lost all those games early. Billikens, everybody get
oh,
beat.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, oh, for Saturday, oh, for the weekend.
Even going further back, there are times like when the Rams were here and you'd have bad weekends of teams just all losing
yeah.
over the same stretch. That last night was good. And the games ended within, what, 5 minutes of each other?
Yes, which is good in one sense and then an editing nightmare if you're alone at 10 o'clock. But it was great. I cannot be more excited about today's program either. Gene Principe, he's one of the best in the business at covering the National Hockey League. He's with Sportsnet out of Canada. He'll join us at 10:30. Martin will be here at 11, and then a special guest at 11:20.
Reed Lowe.
Who really is outspoken and candid and doesn't care what you think and has got some great opinions. Former Blues enforcer Reed Lowe joining us. Our opening monologue is brought to you by Gateway Motorsports Park, and let's begin with lap one. So I can remember being at the Mills on July 1st. And I was corresponding with Mike Caruso with the Blues. And I said, yeah, I'm going to come on out. Can you get me Army? He goes, yeah. So we interviewed Doug Armstrong. And it was right after we thought his day was going to be over. And he had picked up a couple of players, but he had not picked up Ryan O'Reilly. But one of the players he picked up that day, and believe me, it did not move the needle at all here in St. Louis, was David Perron. Well, David Perron was in action last night.
The Blues win the faceoff back to Parayko. Now to David Perron, a shot. He scores! Perron let it go and David tip, and the Blues have tied the game at one.
And I'm well aware that David Perron does not have a prolific playoff resume. That was a big goal last night. And I can still remember tweeting out what Doug Armstrong had said about David Perron. And I'm driving back, and I get back to the station, and there was a flood of nothing but negative tweets about, oh, boy, this is how the Blues are going to resurrect their franchise, bring back David Perron for the 12th time. He also made a move that day, and he picked up Tyler Bozak. And Tyler Bozak was in action last night.
And he's finished at the end of that play. But he stays on it. Trying to center it. Bozak scores! Tyler Bozak finally breaks through.
And the guy who set that up was another guy he acquired. Not July 1st. It was a little bit later, I believe. But Pat Maroon. That, you know, we said about 2 weeks ago was the best play of Pat Maroon's Blues career. That may have been last night. And Maroon, of course, was playing with a heavy heart. His grandfather, who he was extremely close to, passed away that morning. And Maroon has a moment like that to set up Bozak with the game-winning goal. Pat Maroon has had a lot of moments like that lately. He has been absolutely terrific. Pat Maroon has gone from a player, I think, Brian, that many thought, well, as soon as this season's over, it's a one-year deal. It's over for Pat Maroon. Now, with the way he's played, I think absolutely the Blues have to consider bringing him back. Especially he wants to be here.
Absolutely. He's turned it around completely. It's been impressive.
But, of course, the hero last night was a fella named Jordan Binnington. What a
Wheeler, Kalaine wide open. That was blocked by Steen. and he's lost his stick. Now Bufflin. Oh, what a save by Binnington on Shafley. Unbelievable.
Are you kidding?
With 12 seconds to go.
What a save by Binnington.
Yeah, they were moving the puck around, and puck went down to Shifley, and I just, you know, I always had to make a little bit of a desperation save there and hope for the best with the boys coming to clear with the rebound. So, you know, that's all I remember, and we're happy with that win.
I'm sure if you saw the game, you have seen the replay. And I don't know if you want to go to your Post-Dispatch sports section or go to STL Today, but just look at this picture for just one moment. Guys, take a look at this for a second. Look at the way his legs are spread out like that. Do you think anybody in this room could do that? The goaltender, you see him? Oh,
wow.
My goodness. That was unbelievable. And it was so fitting that it was against Shifley, because Mark Shifley was the one who began the game by running him. What a night of hockey last night in Winnipeg. And I tell you, after the Bozak goal, the cutaways, where it's just, you know, the place was a morgue right away. All right, lap two. Now, I have a question for everybody out there, and I'd love to get a response either via phone or via the text line. And I want Lucas and Brian to respond to this, too. If you could pick anything to have happen in this 2019 year, what would it be? Would it be the Cardinals win their 12th? Would it be the Blues win their first? Would it be Mizzou winning an SEC championship? Would it be, you know, the Billikens? We'll count like basketball in this. Would it be the Billikens getting to the Final Four, or Mizzou getting to the Final Four, or Illinois getting to the Final Four? I got to tell you, in my mind, it's like a no-brainer. If God said, okay, you could have one thing happen in sports, it would be the Blues winning their first. What about it for you, gentlemen?
It's a no-brainer. I was going to say that, too. It's got to be the Blues, and it feels like the time is right, and the time is now for the Blues, too.
It's got to be the Blues. Get it done.
All right, let's get some response on that on the winning streak text line. I'm a genie. Can grant you any sports wish in this region for this upcoming year. 855-282-8255, 855-282-8255. Now, Martin, of course, would say Marquette winning a national title. No, I bet he wouldn't. He's a Blues guy. All right, lap three. So he texts with Bob Gibson. He talks with Chris Carpenter. And he really is out of central casting to be a star pitcher in the big leagues. He is Jack Flaherty, and he was wheeling and dealing last night.
And it's a strikeout for Flaherty. Two in the inning, three in the game. He's got another. Strikeout number five. Fastball, and he struck him out. 95 miles an hour on the gun, and strikeout number six. Another strikeout held on to by Molina. That's eight tonight.
No walks is huge. I mean, you know, we were just trying to make adjustments off the last two times out. We were going to go try to be aggressive and go attack them. And, you know, I was able to do that today. Kind of just trusted Yachty, trusted the defense. Made some big plays. You know, that double play was big. The line out that Peterson had where Dex was there, that was a very big play. So, you know, it was a all-around good day.
Martin just texted me saying, I just said out loud Blues. Well, other than Marquette winning a title.
All right, Flaherty with eight strikeouts and zero walks. I'll tell you that he struck out Max Muncy in the second with a breaking ball that went about 84 miles an hour. And then in the fourth, Muncy came up and he struck him out with about a 95-mile-an-hour heater. He was great. And, of course, that bullpen, again, with the exception of Webb, Myers was good. Brebbia remains unscored upon. And Dominic Leon finishes things off. It's really great that you have a bunch of guys who are capable of closing out games. You know, Andrew Miller certainly could. He's starting to get a little better. Hicks is your closer, and Dominic Leon can be, you know, a closer from time to time. That was very impressive. Well, also was impressive were hitters 3 and 4 in the lineup. Paul DeJong is just in a groove. He is hitting everything hard. 333 on the season. And Marcell Ozuna, who had another bad base running moment, but I think we could almost excuse it. The guy got 3 hits, had another home run. He's really hitting too. Now, Brian, the lineup today is a true getaway lineup.
This is hearkening back to the La Russa days for getaway day. To their credit, they've won all the first 3 games of this series. The lineup is as follows. We have Colton Wong batting leadoff. Actually, now I just lost it. One sec.
Take your time.
I know.
Hollywood Casino Press Box, all new, 590 The Fan.
Here we go. Colton Wong leadoff, Goldschmidt second, DeJong third, which is fine. Jose Martinez in right, batting fourth. Tyler O'Neill batting fifth and left. Jed Jerko getting his first start of the year, I believe, at third. Harrison Bader batting seventh and center. We get Matt Wieters behind the plate, batting eighth, and then Michael Wacha batting ninth.
And then this is good because this will allow Yadi to get a full day off today, a full day off tomorrow, and then they resume play in Mexico on Saturday. Kind of a weird schedule. Cards and the Reds in Mexico. It's 6 o'clock on Saturday, and then on Sunday, they come back and play at 3 o'clock.
I don't mean to tell people to do daily fantasy or how to handle your off-work lives, but I'd buy Walker Buehler today going up against that lineup.
That's interesting.
I'd buy that.
This is when you need Chuck Marlowe. Or do you think Chuck's in Mexico seeing this lineup? You ought to text him this lineup and see if that would make him call his bookie Vito. All right, lap four. I like the Matt Carpenter story. 2-year extension with a vesting year. So basically, if he meets incentives, he'll get that year of 2022. I talked to Bill DeWitt after the press conference, and I asked him about money, and he said it's basically the same amount of money each year of this extension. Like, he's making 18.5 this year. It's basically that kind of money. So that's pretty good. And it really is interesting, too, because, Brian, you have that entire infield that's locked up for years. That's including Yadier Molina. Your center fielder can't go anywhere. You got your starting pitchers are all real young, and Michaelis, who's extended. This is the team we're basically going to see for a long time together.
And that's a pretty good infield, too,
yeah.
Especially defensively. There aren't many holes in that infield, so you're comfortable with that.
And I think it's perfect, too, because Nolan Gorman is still 18. I think he's going to turn 19 summer.
So it almost is like they're setting up a transition, it
seems. And what about this idea, too, Brian? Let's say Gorman is ready. I mean, let's say he's like Tatis and ready a lot sooner. Well, he may be ready about the exact time the National League puts in the DH.
Yeah.
If
there's one issue, Gorman is in single A, but he has an OPS above 1,200. He's crushing the ball.
Gosh.
So he'll get the call to Springfield sometime this summer. But if there is a hole in his game defensively, last year through all the levels had 21 errors at third base. So that's something he needs to clearly work on. But yeah, DH in a couple of years, maybe.
Yep. How about let's hear from Mr. Carpenter yesterday.
I can't put into words the gratitude that I'm feeling right now. I want to personally thank Mr. DeWitt and Mo, Mr. Gersh, my agent Brian, for just making this possible, taking a chance on a fifth-year senior at a TCU in 2009, you know, to be here today and potentially have an opportunity to wear the same uniform, one that I admire and treasure for an entire career, is quite a thrill. And my wife and my family are extremely grateful and just couldn't feel more blessed to be able to play in such a great city like St. Louis for the best fans in baseball, for the best organization in sports. And I'm just extremely honored to be here. You know, as Mo touched on, this team with Shilty and where we're headed and what we've got in the future that this team, the potential's there, and I'm just so excited to get to be a part of it.
He really handled the press conference great. He was just so humble, so appreciative, and you should be when you're going to sign a contract like that. But it was awesome. And how about, too, that you had the potential of having three guys, Wainwright, Molina, and Carpenter, play their entire major league career, I should say, because Waino grew up in the Braves organization, but their entire major league career with one team. And three guys who just have such an appreciation for Cardinal Nation and Cardinal baseball. Really good to see. Thoughts on that? Come on aboard. We have the Maryville University phone lines at 855-282-8255 and the winning streak text line at that same number. All right, lap five. We are just a couple of weeks away from the NFL draft, and the hottest topic locally will be the status of one Drew Locke. Charlie Casserly seems to be a guy that's out on a limb like nobody else, because he has Locke going 32nd, the last pick in the first round, I think, to the Patriots. I think that's it. But everybody else has him earlier, and nobody does a more thorough job than John McClain of the Houston Chronicle. He's been doing these drafts for over four decades, and he does about 10 mock drafts a year. He keeps updating them as he gets more information coming in. And we asked him about Drew yesterday.
The Giants, with Eli Manning, pure pocket offense, would like to have a quarterback that could slide to the left and right, but mainly throws from the pocket. Locke would fit there. He would fit with Miami. I think he would fit with Miami. It's a new coach and a new staff. But based on where Brian Flores came from, New England, and Tom Brady's a pocket passer, I would think he would fit there. And then Washington, Alex Smith is a guy that threw on the run a lot. Case Keenum will do that a lot. But Jake Gruden would prefer a guy who's got some mobility to avoid the rush and buy himself a little time, but he likes for him to stay between the tackles. The only one I would not see Drew Locke fitting into is the system that Cliff Kingsbury is going to play at Arizona, and that's why everybody thinks Kyler Murray is going there. And it wouldn't surprise me at all, based on I probably watched Locke play four games, and I've talked to a lot of people, and now, at this time, they look for warts. As you get closer to the draft, they're not talking about the strength, they're talking about the warts. It's like people are saying Dwayne Haskins is falling, and then Casserly having him to go to 32. There's just no way Drew Locke is falling to the bottom of the first round and landing in the Patriots' lap.
All right. Lap six. So, last night, I think it was ESPN.com, they came out with an interesting study where they actually look at the most miserable fan bases in pro sports. And how they factor this in is championships, playoff berths, playoff wins, heartbreaks, and rival comparison. And number one.
Ooh, let me guess.
All right.
Bills.
They are on the list. But they're not number one.
Not number one. I'm just thinking, they haven't won a playoff game in almost 20 years. Yeah. Over 20 years at least, right? There's no way it's local, is it?
It's not local.
Okay.
In fact, I'll tell you about that in just a moment. But number one on the list, the Sacramento Kings, who ironically are making a little bit of a comeback with Darren Fox and Marvin Bagley. But their recent playoff stuff is really bad.
Just on the outside of the playoff race this year.
Yes. Number two, the San Diego Padres. Now, okay. It's hard to be miserable living in San Diego, but if you look at that winning, again, though, a team that could be on the rise.
On the rise, but yeah. Again, an hour north, that's where all the success is, the Dodgers.
Then Chris Gardner's Buffalo Bills.
Yep.
Number three. They leapfrogged the Browns and are now their most miserable fan base in the NFL.
And they're not doing much. They don't have the we're on the rise either.
No, they don't.
They're just there.
Number four, the Florida Panthers. And is that where Joel Quenville
is? Yeah, Joel Quenville now.
Yeah. Boy, maybe that'll pick up. Cleveland Browns, number five. And I don't know how, yeah, I guess we're going on history, but their future looks very good right now.
Yeah, but can you know, the Ravens leave, win two Super Bowls. The Steelers are, up until this year, were a pristine franchise.
The Jets.
Okay.
Six, yeah. The Patriots have kind of ruined their lives. The White Sox at number 7 with so much promise in this offseason, but it didn't work out.
Huh.
But, yeah, you look at that. They haven't done much in a long time.
Was that the first baseball team?
Yes.
No, the Padres. Padres. The Padres. So they're the second? Wow. Okay.
They haven't made the playoffs since 2010, I believe.
Eight. 2008. Yeah. They haven't.
Double-check that. I thought they made it in 10.
That was the Twins won the division that year. Yeah.
They didn't make it as a wild card. Okay. Dolphins at 8. Yeah, it's been a while. It's almost been since, like, Dan Marino was around. The Reds, who had this reputation of being this great baseball city, but, man.
Yeah.
You are now the most miserable fan base in the National League Central. The Buffalo Sabres at 10. And they actually bring up Brett Hall might have been in the crease illegally, but Sabres fans would probably take losing Game 6 of the Stanley Cup Finals over what has happened since. Arizona Coyotes, 11. Phoenix Suns, 12. Let me go through this real quick. Seattle's tied for 12th. The Lions are 14th. The Redskins, with that great fan base, but boy, they've been so bad for so long. Tampa Bay, the Charlotte Hornets, Tampa Bay Rays are on kind of on the upswing. Milwaukee's 19th, Brian.
The Brewers?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I guess in the context that we've seen the Cubs and Cardinals have a lot of success winning pennants and World Series titles, but I don't know. They seem pretty fortunate right now.
Yeah, they got the MVP.
You have Christian Yelich. You were one win away from the pennant last October.
And then a Carolina Hurricane round out the top 20.
Okay, I'm sorry. I think the Blues are more miserable than the Hurricanes. I do put a lot of stock in, have you seen your team win at all?
Well, the Blues, which are the first ones from St. Louis on this list, 74.
Are you serious?
Yeah. I guess they haven't looked at the 52 years.
Boy, I put a lot of stock in.
But it is 42 playoff years.
Yeah, but I mean, I put a lot of stock in have you seen your team win it. And I know Carolina Hurricane fans have been through some losing years, but if you're a reasonable age, like if you're 25, 30, you've seen the Hurricanes hoist the cup.
The least miserable sports team, the Patriots.
Yeah.
Second least, the
Red
Warriors.
Sox. Oh.
Then the Penguins. Then the Spurs, Blackhawks, Cavaliers, Heat, Celtics, Red Sox. Why would the Celtics be... And the Red Sox have won before. Have won a couple since the Celtics have won. Mm. So, the Cardinals, by the way, are 91st on this list out of 123.
Yeah, we can't complain.
Yeah. But it's interesting. St. Louis doesn't pop up till 74.
I mean, the Blues should be higher.
We'll take a short time out. We'll come back with Gene Principe talking NHL playoffs right after.